The NFL is 100 years old. Any great culture needs a history. We need to celebrate where we've been and who we are. And this year, the NFL is going to make sure that their culture is represented and celebrated across the Fruited Plain. Football has clearly become part of the American culture. In many ways, it's eclipsed baseball as the American game. In true American fashion, it began by taking a word that the rest of the world believed to mean something else and co-opting it into its own. See, the rest of the world, when they hear football, they think soccer, naturally. But when we say football, we mean football. American-style football. And it's American in its violence, in its brutality, in the fact that it's bigger and more colorful than anything else, that it gathers families and creates traditions. Over the last several years, the NFL has begun on their NFL network to create little miniature documentaries, half-hour, hour-long, and sometimes even two-hour documentaries on football players and individual teams. They call the documentary the American Story. And this is my football story, my football life. I was born in 1966 in Buffalo, New York. I was born a Roman Catholic and a Buffalo Bills fan, and not necessarily in that order. When I was born, my father was in his third year at dental school at the University of Buffalo. He had moved to Buffalo in 1964 to join the dental school. And in his first year there, the Buffalo Bills won the AFL championship. In his second year, they won again. Oh, and he married my mother. That was the first time the Bills went back-to-back as the AFL champions, later to be the AFC. I was born in 66, the year of the first Super Bowl. That year, the Bills faced Len Dawson and the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFL championship game. They lost it 30-3 and ended up sitting out the first Super Bowl. They'd get there eventually, but that Super Bowl year became a template for times to come. The Chiefs went on to be defeated in pretty fantastic fashion themselves by the Green Bay Packers. And after 1966, the Bills went into a slump. As I was growing up, the Bills, well, they stunk in my cradle and toddler years. My parents did their best to give me a good life. My father didn't have a whole lot of family at this time in his life. When he married my mother, his father came into the room that he was waiting in before the wedding and told him that if he married my mother, that he would not be a part of his family. And my father went ahead with the wedding. It was difficult because his first step as a man, as a husband, was to step away from his family in a relatively dramatic fashion. And so I grew up in a situation in which, though we visited family often, it was often strained visits. The relationship took years, decades to heal. And in my young life, we did not have the closeness with my father's family that I would have liked to have been able to have as a kid. So it was replaced. And we had things that we had. We created our own culture, our own history, our own understanding. My father was also estranged from the church. Though, as Roman Catholics, we attended every Sunday, he didn't really believe in what we were doing there. We didn't really worship on Sunday. Us as kids, we did. My father just went because that's what dads do. That's what Catholics do. They show up. It was a lesson that he taught me. And a lesson that in many days, when I don't feel like showing up, as a father, as a pastor, as a husband, I show up anyways. What my father really loved to do was after church, in the fall, in the autumn. That's when life began. We went to games. We watched games. We listened to games. To this day, I still remember my first Super Bowl. I've never been to one yet. But this one was watched on a 9-inch black and white television. Miami against the Redskins. Larry Zonka, Bob Greasy, the greats, the no-name defense of the Miami Dolphins. I hated the Dolphins, but I loved the Super Bowl. I hated the Dolphins because in those days, the Dolphins had beaten the Bills through the 70s 20 straight times. 20 straight times. It still stands as a record of one franchise against another. But the next year, the very next year, my personal romance with the Bills began. It was O.J.'s 2003-yard season, 1973. O.J. Simpson, for the next 4 years, became the only reason to watch the Bills. We used to joke that the gameplay of the Bills was O.J. left, O.J. right, O.J. up the middle, and then punt. It was a great time to be a Bills fan. We had a marquee hero. He brought the California sunshine into a snowy western New York. Now, we didn't realize who he would become. We just know that he was the orange juice guy. He was the coolest, nicest, sharpest dude in the entire NFL. And when he wasn't scrambling away from defenders, he was chasing the towering inferno in Hollywood. He was running through airports. Everyone knew him. And when we saw him, we said, Buffalo must be something. The 70s was a weird time. As we were growing up, we were also moving farther and farther away from the Catholic Church. The 70s was a time in which I was coming into my own. I remember listening to games with my father and doing things around the yard. Those autumn days, I remember posting notices around the property. We lived in the country, and we had hunters that would come in, and they had, at some point, we had had dangerous situations where they were shooting right into our backyard. And so we started posting notices to keep off the property in hunting season unless they knew they checked in with us. And I would go out there in the field, in the truck, and we'd get out with our staple guns and our signs. It was like I was working for a political campaign. And we just hit every tree until my hand couldn't barely squeeze on the trigger anymore. I remember listening to a Colts game with my father building a shed that would be at the tennis court that my father had installed in the house. And we built that shed listening to the game. The Bills got beat. Burt Jones took out Joe Ferguson that year. But I remember it. I remember driving back from a holiday gathering at Thanksgiving time in Toronto, which was one of my favorite places to go as a family. And I'm driving back on a Sunday. OJ got hurt, and they replaced him with a guy that would become my next hero, Roland Hooks. You've never heard of him. No one has. But on that Sunday morning, Roland Hooks ran for 4 touchdowns. And I remember listening to it on the radio in the car as we drove from Toronto back to our home in western New York. By the late 80s, OJ had been traded to San Francisco. And we had traded in Roman Catholicism for born-again Baptists. The 70s, the late 70s and the early 80s were a time in which the Bills found a 4-year renaissance under a coach by the name of Chuck Knox. They looked good again. And then I went off to college. And In my college years, I had very little access to the Bills. We were in a small town before cable and internet and all these kinds of things that we take for granted today. I remember my father would cut out the clippings from the paper, and he would fold them into an envelope, and he'd send them to me every week. And I had a little bulletin board that I'd put all the clippings on. And it was 12 and 14 years that I would be celebrating. And then Jim Kelly came into town in 1986, and the Bills had a little bit of hope again. And I started my junior and senior years with some hope. 86 and 87 were those bridge years. And I graduated from college, and like a lot of other kids, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. So I went back home thinking I'd find a job. Apparently, having a double major in psychology and biblical studies doesn't qualify you to serve fries at McDonald's. And so I discovered that if I was going to do anything, it was going to be to go to graduate school, because that's all I was qualified for. But before I made that decision, I spent 2 years with my family. I moved back into the house, and I worked with my dad. My mom got sick, and in those 2 years that I was home, the Bills got better. 1988 was the first year that the Bills went back to the playoffs for several years. They were defeated by the Cincinnati Bengals, who then were defeated by the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl that year. But the Bills got right to the AFC Championship game. In 1987, it was another Ohio team. I didn't realize that I was going to the team that would destroy my team. But in 89, it was the Cleveland Browns that knocked the Bills out of the playoffs. OJ was there outside the locker room wearing a weird jacket that had a Buffalo Bills logo on one side and a San Francisco 49ers on the other, because he was rooting for both teams to go to the Super Bowl that year. 49ers went and won. The Bills lost to Cleveland when Jim Kelly threw a last-minute interception to Clay Matthews. Yes, not the one playing for the Green Bay Packers, but the one who was the dad of the one playing for the Green Bay Packers. And O.J. stood outside the locker room when they went to the locker room, because the Bills were so angry with each other that they got into a fist fight when OJ was in the locker room. And OJ wore his Bruno Mollies and his black leather gloves. He did. And said how the Bills were a dysfunctional team. He couldn't believe the violence in the locker room. Yeah, take that. Think about it for a while. And then in 1990, I followed my call and went to Dayton, Ohio to start my seminary career. 1990, I left New York State never to return. Well, I went for visits, but you know what I mean. And in 1990, the Bills began their 4-year Super Bowl run. I couldn't watch the game with my family, so I ended up going to Cincinnati, where my Uncle Tim lived. He invited me to come and join him, and we saw that game, and we held hands as their kicker missed the last second field goal in wide right, became an infamous statement for every Buffalo fan. They lost by 1 point in a last second field goal, but we were hopeful. Our team had finally made it. They might not have made it to the promised land, but they made it to the mountaintop. And next year, we said, was going to be our year. Next year, it was going to be ours. Between Super Bowls, my marriage fell apart. And on the day before Super Bowl 26, my wife moved all of her stuff out of the house. No, not Betsy. And I drove to New York with my son, Scott, and my brother, Rand, who also was in seminary with me, to watch the football game. And I remember thinking, God's going to give me a win. I need it. I deserve it. Buffalo by 10. Easy. The MVP of the NFL lost his helmet for the first series of downs. Thurman Thomas, I'm wearing his jersey today. Apparently, the band that performed the national anthem, one of the brass players decided that he needed to stand where Thomas's helmet was, and he picked it up and he moved it. When Thomas went back to get his helmet, it wasn't there. People didn't know who it was. It was only revealed 20 years later that it was a member of the band. That'll teach them for letting a musical guest sing. By the next year, my life was beginning to heal. I had met Betsy. And Betsy was going to watch her first Super Bowl as a quasi-Bills fan. What that means is that she actually would watch as I would scream. Now, this was a big deal because it was the first time that she was going to be introduced to the people and she was going to be there at the game with me. Now, I had watched the Bills play the Houston Oilers, and I was on the phone with my dad as the Bills went into the locker room losing by 31 points. And we had decided that it was all over. This team could never win again. Until Frank Reich came out in the third quarter and led a comeback. It was the greatest comeback in NFL playoff history. The entire time, because the game didn't sell out in Buffalo, my dad couldn't watch it. And so I was on the phone doing the play-by-play for my father as the Bills led the comeback. At the beginning of the third quarter, we were talking about who needed to be traded and who needed to be fired. By the end, we were sure this was our year. The Bills went to the Super Bowl a third straight time, and they were defeated 52-17. The only highlight of that game was a little diminutive wide receiver by the name of Don Beebe chased down a defensive tackle and caused a fumble right before he made it 59-17. The Bills made it one more year into the Super Bowl. And they got beat again. Then Jim Kelly retired. And by the end of the 90s, they were led by a little quarterback by the name of Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie led them to the playoffs two more years. But the second year that Flutie led them, the Bills decided that it would be a good idea to start a younger quarterback who was taller, stronger arm. Guy by the name of Rob Johnson. So right before the playoff game against the Tennessee Titans, Rob Johnson was installed as the quarterback. The Bills came back in that game with 15 seconds to go to kick a game-winning field goal. And all they had to do was kick the ball back to the Titans and stop them. What happened next is what they call the Music City Miracle in NFL in the NFL. What happened was the guy received the ball, and he threw it across the field to a receiver on the other end who then ran straight into the end zone for a touchdown. Bills fans to this day will say it was a forward pass. Didn't matter. The Tennessee Titans would go on to face the Rams in the Super Bowl. Rams would win, but the Titans got there. For the next 17 years, the Bills didn't make the playoffs again. Every year at the beginning of the season, it was going to be our year. New quarterbacks, new coaches. It didn't matter. We still lost. The Bills were always a little bit behind the times, many would say. But I like to think that in this way, the Bills were in front of the times. You see, my football story is about how I experienced it. And 9/11 happened to me in 1999. I continued to have losing season after losing season. Everything when you're losing gets louder and angrier. And what happened across the nation was a new team took over as America's team right around that same time. New England Patriots. It's kind of astonishing that the Patriots would become the post 9/11 franchise. And they'd win multiple Super Bowls with a golden-haired young fella by the name of Tom Brady, who's now 40-something, still winning. It was a drought that lasted for 17 long years. And as the drought continued, I raised a family. I created more Bills fans. And every year in between, as August came through, I would talk to my father and my brothers, and we would talk about how the next year would be the one. 2017, the Bills were winning. New coach, new quarterback. My father had been dealing with cancer for the last 7 years. And in October, I got the call that we all knew was kind of coming. My father let me know that the chemo that they were using just wasn't going to work anymore. And so he let us know that he had chosen hospice. The family gathered together, and we decided it would be a really good idea if for 1 week, all four boys came home. We did. We had 5 days where it was just the core family. My mother, my father, and me and my brothers and I. And on that Thursday night, there was a Bills game. I looked at the schedule and I couldn't believe it. I called my brother David. I said, David, Thursday night, there's a Bills game. The Bills play the Jets with playoff implications. This could be the year. And so we created a party. And we were going to celebrate. It was going to be like it was. And it was. The Bills got beat. By the end of the first half, we were looking and saying that this was God getting us for putting our hope in this team. My father didn't really want to watch the game. It really wasn't that important to him. He had gotten past thinking that a team could create an identity. You see, when things get serious, what we realize about our teams and our idols and our parties and even our families is that all of those things that animate us so much are memories that we're seeking to recapture instead of something that we're looking forward toward. When my father was facing death, he wasn't looking backwards in nostalgia. He was looking forward to heaven. This was what we understood. The Bills went to the playoffs. And some of my family said that the Bills might have had an angel on their shoulder. But I knew better. I knew that my dad didn't care about football. He didn't care about the Bills. You see, the Bills weren't the point. Never were, never are. Going to the playoffs is fun because it gives us more games. Winning is fun because it helps us to have an identity as a winner outside of ourselves. But what you realize quickly is that when your team wins, it goes away. And the next year begins, and now you got to start all over again. The world and the sports world is always looking for the wrong victory. And as fans, we get sucked into it every year. It's fun, but it could also become an idol. The reason that Jesus told us to hate our parents isn't because he wanted us to hate our parents. It's because he realized that some of us, as 10-year-old boys, would take an idol that our dad had and think that that was what his life was about. Have you ever done that? Have you ever taken something as a child that you thought was all important? By the time I had discovered what was so important in it, my father had discovered Jesus. And he moved on. He still enjoyed the games, but he enjoyed the games for different reasons. You see, what happened during the games was that I worked outside with my dad. And I learned to pray in those moments. And I learned to love in those moments. It was never the game. It was never the team. It was always Jesus walking with us, teaching us, comforting us, guiding us, directing us, and eventually receiving us. You see, my 10-year-old vision of what was important is a long-lost idol and memory. But now, I am beginning to slowly understand and unpack the reality that none of that is worthy. Jesus is calling us to something much more impressive. And Jesus is calling us to ignore the other things that can become a distraction. Now, I'm not telling you not to watch the game today. I'm not telling you not to gather your family and enjoy things. But what I'm telling you is to make sure that when you have them there, when you're gathering, when you're wearing the jersey, when you're eating the chips, you know, when you've made your buffalo dip and all those other kinds of stuff, just remember to invite Jesus in. And just remember that sports can sometimes be a way that we use, a vehicle that we use to ignore what's really important. And for men, this is incredibly important. You see, we want to have something to talk about so that we don't shed tears, so that we don't pay attention to what's really happening. And sports fits that bill. It's the perfect idol when you don't want to think about your dad dying. It's the perfect idol when you don't want to think about the separation in your family. It's the perfect idol when you don't want to think about a future that is difficult. It's the perfect idol when you don't know what your tomorrow is going to bring. But here's the truth. We know what our tomorrows are going to bring. Share that with your family. Have the tough conversation. Make sure that they know that whatever they win in this life, Super Bowls, promotions, degrees, that they are meaningless in comparison to the victory that only Jesus can bring. That is what Jesus meant when he said that you have to hate your mother and your father and your wife and your children and your sisters and your brothers and follow me. Let's pray. Loving God, we ask that you would be here with us, that through your Spirit you would change us, that you would transform us, that you would empower us to follow you. Help us to deal with the realities of our lives, the pains, the difficulties, and the uncertainties of the future. Help us to know that you have walked with us from the time we were born, that you loved us before we loved you, that you died for us before we were a thought in our grandparents. Loving God, you have created our ways, authored our lives, provided our salvation, and empower us to this day. Help us to never look to anyone or anything else to find our identity and our purpose. And help us here at First Baptist Church to be a people of Jesus in his kingdom, following his way, teaching his truth to generations to come. And we pray it all in the name of the Most High God, in the power of the Holy Spirit, and by the blood of his Son, Jesus the Christ. Amen. Let's conclude our time together as we sing, Lift High the Cross.